Thank you, Theodore. And thank you that we can have this trauma conference. On my laptop, I have 313 participants. Wow. I take up this question, this attitude of questioning that Theodore has opened. And the title of my contribution today is also a question. What is trauma and what is not trauma? And I will come back to this because everybody who applied to this conference received a questionnaire, and because the organizers wanted a little bit of an impression out of what situation you are coming and what sort of interest you have in this trauma conference. Are you coming at it from the professional angle, or have you personally suffered trauma, or perhaps both? And so I would like to explain a little bit about myself. I have something which I'd like to speak about, which is very current. It's a verse by Rudolf Steiner. And before this presentation, I read something very interesting about quiet, about inner quiet, that Rudolf Steiner, on the evening of the fire of the Goetheanum on the New Year's Eve, 31st of December 1922, Steiner held a lecture where he explained how one comes to rest in the head. And he said, you come to rest in the head through movement. And if you differentiate, you can see that half of the body needs to move, and the other half of the body is then at rest with the right and the left hand side. And maybe this is a key to everything that we do in our therapies. And now, I'm not a specialist in physical body movement, so I leave that up to those who work with it. But I will read this verse, the inner quiet that Steiner gave us. I bear quiet within me. Quiet I bear within me. And quiet I bear within me, I bear within myself forces to make me strong. Now will I be infused with their glowing warmth. Now will I fill myself with my own will's resolve. And I will feel the quiet pouring through all my being. When by my steadfast striving, I become strong to find within myself the source of strength, the strength of inner quiet. So now I've come to this question, what is trauma and what is not trauma? And I will try and show through what I have experienced personally that it becomes more clear what is a relationship between to this subject. And I will make a personal presentation. And maybe this will connect to other relationships. And perhaps you also discover your own personal journeys. And I want to do this in detail in my profession. And I'm starting. I was very lucky that I studied medicine in Heidelberg. And that was in the end of the 70s. At the end of the 80s, when I was doing my PhD about the illness, about all the illnesses that patients have before they develop cancer. And the vegetative dystonia that came very often before a cancer illness. And people would nowadays say that this is psychological, psychosomatic symptoms of the circulation and of the vegetative system, of the nervous system. And at that time, this was very widespread in Europe. And this was helped a lot by going on a convalescent stay, in German called a cure. And patients who had a trauma diagnosis and yet the trauma was not connected to a trauma diagnosis, and this was not understood. At the end of the 80s, I was working in an anthroposophical psychiatric clinic, and logotherapy, and I got to know Viktor Frankl's analysis. And with the background of Viktor Frankl, who was a psychotherapist who survived the Holocaust in Vienna, and after he was released from the concentration camp, he published a book, Despite Everything, Saying Yes to Life, which is still very, very current nowadays. And in this time, in the psychiatric clinic, there were no trauma diagnoses as yet. And the next thing, at the beginning of the 90s, I was working in the Bern University Clinic, and I had individual patients who had a trauma diagnosis, especially with a Holocaust background, people who had survived the Holocaust, most of them from the Eastern Europe. And I worked with a systemic humanist training, and it became clear that individual illnesses are often connected with the whole family and with the whole of society. And that the patients needed to be taken in to the therapy. At the end of the 90s, I started my own practice, and there I met women who were trauma patients who had been sexually abused, and the literature that I read then, I read the American book and one particular title, which was very special, because these ladies who'd been, these women who were, had survived trauma, that they were called survivors. And they were spoken of as survivors. And through this experience, I realized how important it was in a trauma-oriented, that I wanted to do a trauma-oriented training. And I did this with Louise Redeman. And the name of this trauma therapy is Psychodynamic Imaginative Trauma Therapy. And psychodynamic means, in psychotherapy, and it sort of means analytical, started by Sigmund Freud and others, that one works in an analytical concept. And what is so special is that this is connected with an imaginative picturing, with the imaginative experiences by these survivors, that these are taken into the therapy. And this type of therapy is really good for people who have a so-called complex trauma, and that one can differentiate. You can say there is a simple trauma. It doesn't mean that it's easy, but it's a simple, that they are just a few moments that created the trauma. And then with the complex traumatisms, there are many different traumas, all that was taken place over many years, and the traumatizing happened at different times. And also perhaps other psychological issues like fears and deep depressions. So then in 2005, I wanted to understand things from an anthroposophical point of view of these stress-related illnesses and the post-traumatic stress disorder. And not just trying to understand this from an anthroposophical point of view, but actually creating impulses for therapy of these disorders. And so publishing articles, books that you can find in the German language, and some of them have been translated. You can find this on the website Achtsam Werden. It's the last slide of his presentation when he brings his slides. And then 2010, I did another training that was values and ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, which is used for trauma therapy. And then 1915, what became much more clear for my own story, there was a book by Louise Redeman, Children of the War and Grandchildren of the War in Psychotherapy. And there I discovered that this diagnosis, vegetative dystonia, is a trauma diagnosis And with this, I could discover that there are symptoms that appear with in trauma. So one says a feeling of being dissociated, of feeling alienated. And I can explain this by saying that the trauma is not just, it doesn't just take effect on the people who have the trauma themselves, but it is transgenerational, even as it says in the title of the book, of war children and war grandchildren, that even the grandchildren born after the war are affected by this. And this, from this time onwards, I had the opportunity in different places in Switzerland to give public lectures together with Theodore on the subject of trauma dynamics and writing articles, and together with the medical section of the Goetheanum in Dornach, or writing in the Merkurstab, the German medical publication. And so I come to the end of my own personal biography, my relationship to trauma. And so now I will carry on to the PowerPoint presentation. We have chosen that the slides are going to be presented in English because we thought that there may be more people who understand English than those who might understand German. And for those people who can't understand English, as Theodore explained at the beginning, in the proceedings, these slides will be available. And I'd like to point out that this presentation that I'm going to do is freely available in internet, and it's not copyright protected. So if you're interested and you want to look at this, then you can find to these concepts, you can find the literature in the internet. So now, first slide, please. So this is the documentation of the different concepts. The first we have concept, we have resilience. Then we have the concept of recreation. And then we have the actual post-traumatic stress disorder. And then we have post-traumatic growth or post-traumatic maturing. And the concept of resilience over the last few years has become a very popular one. There's a colleague, a psychiatrist, in Switzerland, in the canton Freiburg, which is next door to Bern, Mr. Hasler, and he published a book on resilience, overcoming stress and fears, where it is about the post-traumatic disorders. And he says that the way you deal with your traumas is dependent on not just the possibilities of each individual, but it is as to whether they are carried by their network, by their surroundings. And then we have the psychological functions, and then we have the traumatic event. And what is meant with this psychological function? And in general, one could say that through a stress situation, you might become you would stop wanting to do anything, you would become paralyzed, you would not have any will to do anything, disinterest. And with resilience, that you might have many competencies and you might be supported from outside, but that you might be through the trauma, through the event, you are just briefly incapacitated and then are able to function once more. But then if we think about that the surroundings play a large role, then we need to look and see whether a child or whether a young person, that it's very important how the network and how the surroundings react. And this gives us the possibility, and there is trauma education that can help. And if you're working with children in a group, this can be very helpful. And there is an example where you would think that you could immediately intervene and that you could help quite a lot, that no illnesses would come about in natural disasters. And the debriefing shows that this can actually create more damage than help. And this is perhaps the moment to say, with these So Theodore's asking him to translate the English word debriefing. So he's describing that people would be able to speak about their experience. So they would actually verbalize as much as possible as they could about their difficult trauma. And many people need rest and not actually the confrontation with their experience to be able to cope with this, or that they would rather have positive experiences to overcome this. Thank you for the question, Theo. So from the general and from the causes, you could see that there is a natural disasters can cause trauma. People can cause trauma, and this could be in physical, emotional, or spiritual aspects? And how is this used in medicine? That in the somatic medicine, one speaks about that there's traumatology. Whenever you have surgery, there's traumatology. And that you could have a psychotrauma, psychological trauma. So at the next part of this presentation, where we're looking at the convalescent phase, he's got the word recreation here, but it's really the convalescent phase. And this energy then disappears very quickly. And there you could bring a new concept of salutogenesis. And we would call that the coming about of health. It's a very special concept. Saluto comes from Latin, and genesis comes from Greek. So Aaron Antonovsky created this word, and it shows us what is important to come to convalescence. And we should have coherence. This should create coherence. And we need to connect to this. So this feeling of coherence means that the human being needs understanding and feelings of competency and a feeling of inwardness, a sense of. So the German word feeling is more an English sense. And if you look at an acute traumatic situation, you cannot understand what is happening to this person. Why is this person affected by this? And they don't have the possibility to how to actually work with it. And the capacity to receive help from outside and the sense of so that to make sense of it, to have meaning, the significance of it. That you cannot make sense of it. And if you can improve these qualities, then it's possible to come out of the stress situation. And with the third example, the post-traumatic stress disorder, people cannot get out of this situation so easily. And it lasts quite a bit longer. And this is the diagnosis in the European medical world at the beginning of the 90s or the end of the 80s, that this diagnosis came in psychiatry. And the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, they developed these diagnoses, post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's therefore not surprising when I think about my professional work that these works, these diagnoses, even in the university hospitals, that it wasn't well known. These concepts just weren't there. And that the research in the English-speaking world have been used long before they were used in the German-speaking world. And now to the last one, it's quite amazing that this post-traumatic growth or post-traumatic maturing so one speaks about maturing now in the German-speaking language. And this comes from the 90s. And what is meant there is that this ripening process could be from acute trauma or from post-traumatic stress, and that the person themselves develops the competency and has more than they had before they were traumatized. So I will speak more about this later. And what you can see out of all these four examples that the subject is a very complex subject. And it depends on whether an illness comes about is dependent upon the coping mechanisms of the individual and of his relationship to his environment, to his network. So one must be careful that one can't just say this is the event and the cause is XYZ and the result is the illness. It has many layers that one needs to understand. And yet neuro research is going in the direction that they look at the risks. What are the risks to have such an illness? And it's clear that the risks are connected to the increase if a person has somatic issues themselves, that there is a connection. But many people have met situations with acute post-traumatic problems or chronic post-traumatic illnesses, and yet they did not become ill as such. So they had resilience, or they managed to convalesce, to recuperate. So this brings us to the question, what are trauma causes? So we could have the next slide, please. And what is interesting, what I've experienced, that all these factors, that they are all described under the maturing of post, the maturing that takes place post-trauma. With post-traumatic problems, that things can take place and affect you many, many years later. Perhaps an accident, a bodily injury, and that a previous psychotrauma becomes real. And with these causes, we can see that the first three are recognized by the psychiatry, recognized as, so war experiences and imprisonment in camps, sexual attacks and sexual abuse, grief and loss after the death of family members and partners. These are accepted by the general psychiatry, but the rest of the causes are not really accepted as causes of trauma. And it is clear that the illness can be caused through, now he's reading them when we've lost the slide. So he's reading the different causes. The first three are the most common causes, through war, camps, and sexual abuse, and grief and loss. DSM-5 in the ICD, in the American ICD, even when children experience that their parents or closest person, that they die or they suffer a loss, then the child themselves will suffer a loss, will be traumatized. So similar to this transgenerational trauma. So with these other diseases, there are typical traumas that they come often. For instance, a rheumatic arthritis is an autoimmune disease. And with autoimmune diseases, the body is estranged from itself. The I is estranged, the immune system. The immune system fights its own self. And HIV infections, or the diagnosis of cancer, these can be very difficult to take. One could enter into a trauma situation with these. And the medical interventions, for instance, the bone marrow transplants, or even heart attacks, and people whose houses have burnt down, So now looking at this traumatic stress syndrome, what is the acute system, the acute reaction within our bodily system? So I've divided this up into the freeze that happens, fright or flight. So this freeze, this kind of paralyzing that happens when you have powerlessness and the blood pools centrally, and there is a reaction. You need a reaction to come out of this, and you could have hate or anger. Or you could have shame and panic. And this means that the blood circulation starts up once again. And how it affects in your consciousness or in your soul, you have a dissociation, you're confused, you don't know what is happening anymore, you can't connect the dots anymore. And shame, which can also become panic, and you can end up feeling guilty through that, blaming things, blaming others, and then taking on too much responsibility. And each one of these phases, if it becomes chronic, this dissociation becomes chronic, then you can develop agoraphobia, where you don't want to go outside. And if you're hate and anger, you find this in young people, that you then have a propensity to violence. And if you are constantly in shame and panic, then you end up with anxiety and depression through obsessive thoughts or obsessive actions. So what happens if the traumatic stress reactions, you have a continual state of traumatic stress reactions? It is repeated. So now we have a repeated resurgence of the trauma. So you would have intrusive memories as a result, flashbacks or nightmares. And your body then also reacts to this. So there are some questions that have come up, and he's going to try and deal with it at the end. So a constant feeling of numbness and emotional dullness, bleakness, indifference also towards the environment, as though one is really depressed and one doesn't want to take part in anything, avoiding activities and situations that could trigger the memories of the trauma. Life becomes disinteresting, and one pulls back, one doesn't then have any happy moments. And then there's this continual feeling of stress. This creates a feeling of overexcitement with increased attention, hyper arousal, overexcitement. One takes in too much from the environment. And this can also bring concentration problems. And this is often connected with a high oversensitivity, this continual stress situation. And sleep is often disturbed, and one has anxiety. And at the end, what I mentioned about this estranged perception of the world, a distorted perception of one's body. And so, at the end, I'd like to mention, what is there? How can we move into the therapeutic? Very important is positive emotions. And how does one take care of oneself? What are one's positive daily experiences and social support? Seeing and to make sense of what you've experienced. And to stabilize this, to be able to come out of this after Janet's Sigmund Freud said about the first phase, that when this is necessary, that the confrontation is necessary, and then there's integration. And Louise Redeman brought that into context about the active grief, active mourning, that one would actually go through this traumatic experience to integrate it. And that's my experience. And now I'm interested in your questions, that I could answer some of your questions. Thank you, Harold, for this path that you've walked with us. And with the inner connectedness, there are quite a few questions in the chat. We won't be able to deal with them all. But perhaps we can use, if you could describe how children, Theo's speaking very softly. I don't know how to ask him to speak louder. Are there any other ways that the children can speak about this? So we have to have the consciousness that the children we have to have the consciousness that the adults may not understand this. We have to be conscious about this. Taking care. the children should be able to take into, that they could, that care should be taken about these children. The children might have existential worries. The children don't know about what are existential worries. But taking care of this, this is buried within the body of the children. And the functional disorders like vegetative dystonia. Thank you, Harold. Gabriella asks about estrangement and dissociation. Can you please speak about these two words? Dissociation is where there is an acute shock and you're in the middle of the traumatizing event. You can't think, you can't understand, and you can't seem to get out of this situation. And the other one is, which happens in stress situations, where you notice that everything's becoming a bit vague and swimming, and you're seeing maybe stars before your eyes, and you have a lot of different perceptions. Your perceptions are distorted, and your organs even can be affected. Your limbs, you can't really feel your limbs. And things look much bigger or things look much smaller. And the psychiatric concepts are rather problematic. This distorted body perception is called depersonalization. So you lose yourself, depersonalization. So you are only connected to your body, and we know that we have a spirit. So this is not quite correct. So it's better to say the estrangement, to be estranged from yourself. Patients can understand this better. And if I ask patients if they have these feelings, by their answers, I can recognize as to whether they have something which they have experienced it, or whether they are just understanding the words. Depersonalization means that this estranged feeling of one's body, that the members no longer belong to me, or I experience my members as being different, or as I experience the space around me as different. And if you haven't had this experience, it's really difficult to find a concept for this. This is a feeling, an experience as if. And we know that the body hasn't changed, but the body appears to have changed. And this comes in very different stress situations with different illnesses. It's non-specific. And in psychiatry, it has its own. It's presented in its own way. And therefore, it's not just with post-traumatic stress disorder. Thank you. So there's a question about history and neurasthenics. Steiner's concepts. Yes, this is something which we would connect. Hysteria and neurasthenia. And hysteria is more connected with the lower forces, shame, for instance, and neurasthenia is more the exhaustion of the head, where the breaking down forces that are always in the head and enable us to think clearly, that they get carried over into the body. And I've seen the question, what is the difference between derealization and depersonalization? And you could say, in general, derealization is the experience of the world around me, and depersonalization is the experience of my own self, my body, my soul, my inner aspects. What's the difference between those two? The American diagnosis system, with all trauma, one should be able to sort out, do the people have these? So it is connected directly to the trauma diagnosis. Must trauma be a specific event, or can it also be smaller events that will create trauma? Yes, there's a difference. This post-traumatic stress disorder, as it is described in the ICD, the WHO created the ICD, numbers of the illnesses, and each person could experience trauma. The reaction has to come about within 6 months of the trauma. And with some of these very complex traumas, or these developmental traumas, there are very many single events where one is humiliated, even if it's just verbally, that when that happens again and again, that through another event in a very special relationship, that could then be traumatizing. Thank you, Harold. So it seems like we have to close here. And it is and there are going to be many more questions. And the next subjects are children and young people, and these questions will come again. These questions that are coming now. So a bit of patience, please. And you can put your questions into the chat, and we can't answer all of them, but in the preparation, or Harold can bring them into his lecture, into his talk, and answer them in this way.